Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Come on, the lilies indeed. And on that note, by the way, throughout this week, we will be, our outside broadcast unit and Pat Costello will be touring the highways and byways of the county, ratcheting up support for the Lily Whites against the Boys in Blue for next Sunday's Leinster Senior Football Championship final. And don't forget, we'll have full commentary on that match as usual with Ger McNanny and former Kildare stars Peter McConnon, who used to man the cornerback position back in the 90s under Mick O'Dwyer, and of course the legend that is one John Doyle of Allenwood and Kildare. All of that from early next Sunday afternoon support. But all this week, we'll be out Wednesday, Thursday and Friday coming to your town and inviting you to show your colours and give your support to the lads and sending your messages here and so on and so forth. Back to more serious matters. We've just been talking during the newspaper review about the 8 fatalities from drowning during the past week, despite all the cautions that were issued and the caveats and so on and so forth. And hopefully those people will rest in peace. Indeed, it pales into insignificance, and I use that word very, very carefully there, in terms of the statistics, the latest report on road safety emerging from the Road Safety Authority, which shows the majority of road deaths occur on rural roads in 2021. Vulnerable road users accounting for almost half of serious injuries, on Garda Síochána issuing 88,327 fixed charge notices for speeding in the first half of this year alone. What's going on? Let's find out more. Communications Manager with the Road Safety Authority is Brian Farrell, who's joining me on the line. Welcome to Kildare Today again, Brian.
Thank you, Clem. Good morning.
Oh, those are very stark statistics, Brian, and one wonders. And, of course, the one headline figure that I must put into that mix is 65, your survey showing that 65 people died on Irish roads in 60 collisions between 1st of January to the 15th of July this year again.
Yeah, and since our research department conducted that deep dive into the crash data, there have been more fatalities. And when we launched the review of our half-year performance in road safety yesterday, that figure had crept up to 71. So we've lost 71 lives on the roads to date this year. It is down 7 on last year, but what we're really, I suppose, trying to get across is that that's no cause for celebration, because 71 obviously is 71 deaths too many, but it's on the back of a poor year last year. Out of 32 European countries last year, we were one of 6 that actually recorded an increase in road deaths. Every other country was recording a decrease in fatalities as a result of the pandemic and the impact that it had had on travel patterns and travel volumes. But in this country, it didn't have that effect. And really and truly, while road deaths are down this year, as I said, it's on the back of a poor performance last year. It's also not really showing any signs of improving. Or, we're not really getting it. We've kind of plateaued, I think, in terms of road safety and our performance in road safety. And it is a worry because, against it, as you said in your intro, we have a separate piece of research where we went out and asked people for their attitudes and behaviour on roads, and it's showing regression. It's showing that people's behaviour is regressing, particularly in relation to speeding and the acceptability of speeding. And in the figures that you quoted for the Gardaí, they're showing a 13% increase in the number of speeding detections that they're making. So we are really worried, I'll be honest with you, Clem, because I don't know, is it people just taking their eye off the ball here? Is it complacency? But there does seem to be a pattern out there where road user behaviour is definitely regressing. And we're seeing it across things like driver fatigue and fighting sleep at the wheel, to using a mobile phone and the permissiveness of how many drinks of alcohol you can have before you can drive. So I suppose that's really what we were trying to do yesterday, is sound that warning bell to tell people that, look, we cannot allow this to continue, because you mentioned the number of people killed on the road, but Clem, we also published figures as well that showed there was 406 people seriously injured, and we tend to forget you know, about the people who are seriously injured. And these are people who don't walk away from crashes and whose lives are, could be changed forever as a result of very serious injuries. So we talk about the fatalities, yes, but we also mustn't forget those seriously injured, and 406 people, as I said, seriously injured, almost half of whom were vulnerable road users, with cyclists, pedestrians and motorcyclists.
And you're dead right, Brian, that we tend to focus only on the fatalities, and we forget that probably in nearly every incident there is, we had a very tragic case recently of the three men going up the wrong way on the motorway who are believed to be members of a burglary gang and so on and so forth. Three of them killed, driving headlong into a truck, and yet little or no reports on the truck driver who was seriously injured and will could possibly have life-changing injuries. That's a very good point to bring up into our consciousness. But what intrigues me, Brian, from your survey is that a significant majority of fatalities have happened outside of urban areas, with 82% of deaths occurring on rural roads, and rural roads having a speed limit of 80k per hour.
Yeah, and that's a real change or a shift in the pattern that we've seen. And we don't know, is it because more people are maybe moving out to the country, leaving the city during the pandemic to maybe work remotely from rural areas? It's very, very difficult to really put the finger on why this is happening. But certainly the pandemic has had an impact on the patterns of collisions. Another thing that has stood out, in addition to the fact that the majority of road deaths are occurring on rural roads, is the time at which they're happening. We're not seeing, now it hasn't disappeared completely, but we're not seeing road deaths being skewed to rush hour patterns and late at night, overnight. We're now seeing that the riskiest time on the roads is between noon and 4 p.m. And then there's a period in the evening time, which is probably when people are out and getting their walk or their cycle or their bit of exercise. So that's really something we're trying to highlight as well, that the riskiest times to be on the roads are actually in mid-afternoon and then in the evening time, which is a complete shift of the pattern pre-pandemic.
And that's the time that we would expect ourselves to be at safest, noon to 4 p.m.
Exactly.
That's completely counter to what we might expect. And that should be a warning to everybody who's getting into a car at any time across the day, because I suppose there can be that subconscious, subliminal feeling that, you know, it's only most dangerous when the roads are crowded or when it's late at night or when the weather is bad. But in the best possible conditions, in the middle of the day, we can be very vulnerable.
Look, I couldn't have put that better myself, Clem. You're absolutely right, and it is important for people to be aware of this and why we're sharing the results of this analysis of the collision figures, because we need people to be aware that, look, you know, the times of the day that you might assume, you know, from past, from past messaging that we've put out are the most riskiest, are actually not now. That's not now the case. The times, as you say, that we might associate the roads being their safest, are actually their riskiest, and that's from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. That seems to be the period when more people are out and about, and when you have the greatest risk of being involved in a fatal or serious injury collision. And I suppose that's, I suppose, you know, heading up into the bank holiday weekend, Clem, and with more people staycationing, we're even more concerned that, you know, all of those factors combined with people maybe, you know, travelling to parts of the country that they're not familiar with, you know, being on holidays and maybe just being a little bit more relaxed behind the wheel. And you know, everyone's entitled to the break. God knows we've deserved it. But we want people to understand that, you know, if you are on a staycation, if you are driving over the bank holiday, to please, you know, keep safety front of mind. I know people are probably sick of listening to safety messages with the pandemic and being told what to do. But look, the risks on the road haven't gone away, and unfortunately people are continue to be killed and seriously injured. We just want people to just be mindful of that, practice good road safety habits in particular. And this is the most important message, I think, that ourselves and the Gardaí wants to get out yesterday, Clem, and that is slow down. You know, yeah. People's attitudes are regressing on speeding. It's noticeable. You can see people speeding on the roads.
181,263 fixed charge notices to motorists for speeding last year. That's and we're already at 88,000 this year. There is much heightened Garda and, of course, the speed vans. We're familiar with all of those. But yet, this still happens. 12 to 4pm. Most of the problems, now majority of the fatalities, happening on rural roads where the speed limit is 80 kilometres per hour. And of course, driver behaviour, speeding, the holding of mobile phones, people texting, checking their messages, etc., etc. We need to cop on, folks. Those are astonishing and graphic figures indeed that we're seeing on our roads. And we're all in danger. And remember, every time you do something like that, and I include myself in this, we're speaking for everybody, I'm not just putting myself in danger, I'm putting you in danger. So we need to focus on that. And if I might just end this particular interview by a statement I always give, a little tagline to these things, particularly approaching holiday weekends, but on every day. I think in regards to the issues Brian brought up about speeding there and the amount of people who are still breaching the speed limits, is it not better to arrive alive and early than dead late? You know, or alive and late, I should say, than dead early, because that's what seems to inform most of our driving. I've got to get there soon. So, better to arrive late and alive than dead early. They're stark figures indeed. Brian, thank you for bringing that to our attention, and thank you for your time this morning. Communications Manager with the Road Safety Authority, Brian Farrell. Good morning to you, Brian.
Thank you, Clare.
And thank you indeed. Rural roads, lads, who'd have thought it? 12 noon to 4pm in the middle of the afternoon. Who would have thought it? They're all the assumptions we make that could end up killing us or killing or seriously injuring someone else.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, before we go to Ciara, news of an exciting project in Selbridge, I think, which will be of interest to many, many people in North Kildare and maybe to those in other parts of the county as well who might like to undertake the same idea. Some messages. Clem, I was in the pub last night and had to wear a mask when leaving the table and give a phone number when entering the pub. What did I get vaccinated for? These are the regulations. Vaccination. What did you get vaccinated for? To protect yourself and protect others, like all of us. And yes, those are the terms and conditions under which the pubs were allowed to open. Let's not blame the publicans for this. They're trying to protect and recover their businesses, or indeed any restaurants, cafes, etc., etc. Clem, our Irish swimmer did well last night. Mona McSharry, she incredibly did to reach the top eight in the world. People will say, the typical old Irish begrudgery. Ah, she was last in the final. She's eighth in the world in a sport. She's only the second ever Irish swimmer to reach a final. And that's an incredible achievement. We need to stop, by the way, damning the Irish team because they finished 30th or 40th or 50th in this. We're talking about the world. So I'd love to be eighth in the world at something, you know? But Ciara won't let me. She says, no, you're not going out any training anymore. You're far, far too old for it altogether. But so, good news. Well done, Mona McSharry, and all our Olympians. Isn't, by the way, Eric Donovan, lads, from Athy, great boxer in the professional ranks now, former European bronze medalist, isn't he doing a fantastic job with RTE Television, mentoring or doing the analysis? Thank you, Ciara. She said, sit in my ear, give me all these big words. Thank you, doing the analysis. Fantastic. Nothing like having an expert. Clem, Leo said months ago about COVID numbers. It's only getting out now. Yeah, but the doctors have denied it. Good morning, Clem. Say hello to Laura in Stagsden in Bedfordshire in the UK, who listens to you every morning from Kathleen and John in Kill. Well, Laura in Stagsden, Bedfordshire, a very good morning to you. Thanks for being aboard. Just some of our messages, Ciara.
Yes, just some. Clem, we're going to move on now to Selbridge Camera Club. It was established in 1985 and it's one of the top five camera clubs in this country. And I'm joined now by David Woolahan. He is a member of the club. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Ciara. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, and thank you for joining me. You at Selbridge Camera Club are creating an online archive of images of Selbridge and the nearby towns, and you yourself, you're a project team member on this. Just give us a bit of background to Selbridge Camera Club and how you yourself got involved.
Okay, well, I suppose background to the club, as you said yourself, it was formed in 1985. We have approximately 90 members, goes up and down, but generally speaking in around 90 members. I joined the club actually back in the 80s, 87, 88. At the time I moved into Selbridge and I had a young family. So, and this was back here when it wasn't digital photography, it was all film photography. So it took up an awful lot of time then, and I decided, no, I haven't got the time to do it. So I was about 18 months in the club, but I decided someday I'm going to rejoin the club. So in 2013, when I retired, I rejoined the club, and I have enjoyed every moment of it. It's absolutely wonderful. Photography is wonderful, and Selbridge Camera Club, it's one of the biggest camera clubs in the country, and it's a great club, a wonderful club. So, as I say, I'm enjoying every minute of it here.
And David, obviously this archive in particular, it's going to span from the period of the 1900s to the present day, which is obviously an extremely long time in history. It's not for everyone. Not everybody is enthralled by it, particularly stereotyping the teens. But something like viewing images, it will spark such interest in people. You know, that's what my school looked like 100 years ago. That's what the local shop once looked like.
Yeah, well, over 30 years ago, back in 1990, the club decided that they would produce a photographic record of Selbridge then. That was in 1990. But that photographic record spanned from the early 1900s to 1990. And it was very much a then and now type book. It compares photographs from back in the early 1900s to similar images, in fact the same image if you like, the same image in 1990. Now we've decided for 2021 we would do a book which would reflect the same kind of, it would have that element of then and now. But it's more than just a book that we're producing. This is not just a project for a book. There's also we're producing we're creating an archive of between 1,500 and 2,000 images, and that archive will be curated by the club for years to come. That's one element of the project.
Now, David, but then just again, to note, a lot of people, obviously, in the past 18 months have picked up new hobbies, including photography. So can literally anybody enter their photos into this digital archive?
No, it's members of the club can they enter images into the archive? Well, they can certainly present images to the club, and the club then will be curating this archive. So we'll be making a decision as to what photographs go in, what photographs don't go in. But certainly, yes, people can certainly contribute photographs. Anybody can give photographs to the club, and we can make decisions as to whether they go in or whether they don't.
And
whether they're relevant
detail,
or whether they're not.
And just a bit of detail, David, how do people get in touch with their photography skills that they want to enter in?
Well, if you go on to selbridgecameraclub.net, you have the ability there to, if you like, get in touch with the club. You can tell us what photographs you have or whatever. But ostensibly, we are currently at the moment. You see, there are different elements, as I say, to this project. The archive is one element to it, but there's also we're also producing a book, like similar to what we did back in 1990. We're producing a book, and the book will contain over 450 images, and they'll be images of the built and the natural facets of Selbridge and its surrounding environs. So we will have, like, we have some wonderful, wonderful wildlife photographers in the club. So we will have, photographs of wildlife and their natural habitat. We will also have the monuments, the buildings, and not just the important buildings. A lot of the how Selbridge has changed over the years. That's a really important element of it. To be able to look back and see, you know, and for your kids in time to come, to be able to look back and see how Selbridge looked in 1990, looked in the early 1900s, and how it looked in 2021.
Well, David, this digital archive, copies of the book will be available freely online for many decades, and everybody can go check that out, as you said, on selbridgecameraclub.net. David Woolahan, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Great project.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, David. Great project, I have to say, Ciara. Fantastic idea, and one that could be picked up by other communities as well. We'll keep you posted on that. Meanwhile, Dublin Southwest People Before Profit TD Paul Murphy is scathing in his commentary regarding the government's Pathways to Work initiative. Let's find out more about that. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Clem. Thanks for having me on.
You're right. You certainly, I've seen stuff you've issued on this before. You're certainly not a fan, to put it mildly.
No, so this scheme called the Work Placement Experience Programme is JobRidge 2.0, and people may well remember JobRidge, which is a scheme introduced in 2011 in the context of high levels of unemployment. And JobRidge involved people who were on the dole working for, they got an extra €50 a week, and the employer paid nothing, and they would work somewhere for free from the point of view of the employer for 9 months. And, you know, it was widely seen as exploitative, as displacing actual job creation, and depressing wages generally at the time. And eventually the government was forced to abandon it. We had a major campaign called ScamBridge, which kind of exposed these. But this WPEP scheme is just, it's JobBridge all over again.
Now, before we get into your reasons for feeling that way about it, it's part of the government's Pathway to Work initiative, as we say, called the Work Placement Experience Programme that you've talked about, or WPEP, to give it that old mnemonic. It aims to see 2.5 million people employed by 2024. Now, under the scheme, Paul, participants will be paid €306 a week. And your point about that is, that's not even the current PUP payment in terms of what's allowed. But is it fair to compare and contrast both? Because one is about, let's use that awful word, internship, which can be is exploited from time to time. One is about giving people the experience, the training, the opportunities. The other is essentially about people being out of work, not by their own choice, due to the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, but I think the PUP, I mean, the government recognised that a huge number of people were going to be made unemployed through no fault of their own, and they recognised that €350 was kind of the minimum that you needed to have any sort of standard of living. But now they have a scheme for people who will be working for 30 hours a week and yet don't even come to that level. And, you know, so with JobBridge, you got an extra €50 a week. With this, you get an extra €103 a week on top of your dole for working for a company for 30 hours a week. That works out at €343 an hour, and that cost is paid by the state. It's not paid by the employer at all. So contrary to the recommendations that were given to the government by the independent consultants Indicon, at the end of the last scheme, where they made a whole series of recommendations, 70% of which the government has ignored, one of them was to say, well, the employer should have to make some sort of contribution, because otherwise the danger of job displacement is actually quite high. And that's, I mean, people can go onto the Jobs Ireland website, they can click the WEP button at the moment, and they can see job after job that are real jobs. They can see deli assistants, they can see commie chefs, they can see office assistants, they can see early years support assistants, IT support engineer, retail sales assistant, job after job that is not, these aren't training programs. These people aren't getting trained for 6 months in how to be a deli assistant or to how to be a coffee chef. These people are working and the employer is paying nothing. And if the scheme didn't exist, the irony is, then the likelihood is the companies would actually have to pay someone and really create an actual job for someone to do these, you know, extremely important jobs.
And without being glib to you, Paul, maybe they wouldn't create those jobs. Maybe it is that payment, low as it is, that on the one hand gives people an opportunity to get in the door. Because often, even as an employer here, one of the most common themes in any letter that I ever get when assessing an application is, please, 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 just give me a chance to get in. And how, you know, it's about reconciling that need for people to get their foot in the door. And the other perspective of that, employers who, let's face it, are now more stretched than they've ever been in the past, being receptive to the idea, just being able to take on somebody else. Is it not, in essence, despite the flaws you're pointing out or the criticisms you're attributing to it, is it not a win-win for both employer and for the prospective employee?
I don't think so. I mean, I 100% take the point about many small businesses struggling, and they should be given all the support that they need in terms of grants, interest-free loans, etc. That should happen. But what should not happen is the idea that businesses are struggling, so now we're going to normalise the idea of free labour. Because I think that is a lose-lose from the point of view of certainly everybody in the workforce. And those who are currently unemployed. And there are jobs that otherwise that would exist that are not going to exist because this scheme exists instead, that people work for free. But also those currently in employment. Again, if you normalise the idea that there's some people who are going to work for free from the point of view of the employer, well, then that is going to depress wages for everybody. Because, let's say your boss needs something extra done, and he could turn around to you and say, well, could you squeeze this into your week, and we can give you a wage increase for it. But he's not going to do that now, because he can say, well, I'll just go on this website, advertise for a Jobbridge 2, and I'll get someone to do it for free. So it's bad for everybody, this sort of scheme of normalising free labour. And that's why, ultimately, the government was forced to scrap the last scheme, but they've gone back and the same old kind of classic jobs that we used to expose week in, week out on Stanbridge, you know, it didn't even take a week for them to reappear.
And
again,
finally, Paul, just one point though. Whose fault is it? Is it not the fault of those who would exploit it? I mean, my view on internships here ever would be, and we'd only take them in a very, very limited and exceptional case, and only of students in graduate programmes who need a particular fixed period of time as part of their exams process and degree process, etc., etc. Because certainly, I absolutely recognise the exploitation and the abuse of the term internship that can run on and on and on and on and on. And we saw in the previous job speech scheme so many people who were put sitting just at desks were doing stuff that was totally unrelated to what they were supposed to be training for. But ultimately, whose fault is it? Is it not lying at the feet of those employers who would abuse it, rather than the government, who are just trying an initiative to get more and more people into the jobs market?
Well, I'd say it's both. So I would say to employers, don't be trying to abuse these schemes. If you do, you will be exposed by the Stanbridge campaign. You might have protests outside your shop or whatever you have. So don't be doing it. I agree with that. But I would also say that it's the government's fault. I mean, if the government creates a scheme that is made for this sort of abuse, well, then inevitably some employers are going to seek to take advantage of it.
All right.
And so instead of massaging the unemployment figures like this, the government should actually be investing in real education, real training, and actual job creation.
All right. On that note, Paul Murphy, People Before Profit TD, regarding the Work Placement Experience Programme, WPEP, just launched under the government's Pathways to Work initiative, and their intention indeed to expose any abuses from the motivational point of view of protecting people from abuse. Good talking to you again, Paul. Thanks very much for that. Good exchange on that one, I have to say, from Paul Murphy there. Noel Martin says in an email, any chance that Kildare Today could play the clip available on YouTube of Pat Spillane's analysis of the first half of the 2000 Leinster final and the brief highlights of the second half, which Kildare won? I suppose we can at some stage, but not this, not today. Maybe later in the week as we get closer to that particular Leinster final. But I want to jump across just to Ciara again for the moment, because despite our return to impending floods, what happened to them, by the way? Because we haven't got the forecast. I thought we were going to get thunderstorms and everything yesterday. Didn't get it. Ciara, Irish Water urging customers to keep conserving water.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is despite cooler temperatures, as you mentioned, Clem, and rainfall. The demand for water remains high, particularly in the tourist and coastal areas. This is along the west and south coasts. They're saying the majority of these plants serve water schemes in Limerick, Kerry, Cork, Wexford, Galway and Donegal. But the water body are asking everybody at the moment to try and conserve as much as possible. They do say there are currently no plans to enact a water conservation order. And they say that most customers in the counties I'd mentioned had no impact to their water supply.
And remember, just two quick messages from Kildare County Council. Broadleys areas around there and in Leakslip as well, wasn't it? That there are going to be, or was it Selbridge? You might check out those messages from Kildare County Council about potential water issues. I think it's either it's tomorrow. I think that's going to happen between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. due to essential works.